Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We don't need a couple of pints of Marinkos if we can buy it ourselves and put it on the show account.
Right.
The show account is four things like Marinkos, and it's four things like the Wells Fargo tickets.
Yeah, if say you were sending your son on a scouting field trip to find to try and find material for the show.
Right.
Bring his adult son.
Yes.
Right. So that would, you know, show account is for that, yeah. Even though it was very nice
of some
executives at ESPN to pay for these tickets. Very nice. Yeah. But we could have paid for it.
Yes.
You treat me like a child.
You are a child.
I'm 36.
You're my child.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
You went. We're going to get to this in a second. I want to do some
open stuff. A lot to report.
But yeah, I want to talk about Sergio, and I want to talk about the Wells Fargo and all of that.
The course, surprisingly hilly.
Oh, it's very hilly. You've played it.
Yeah, I have, but I've never caddied the course as I carry a three-year-old on my shoulder for the entire afternoon.
It's pretty hilly there. From Adam Perlman in Boston, you recently spoke about your love of New Balance shoes. I did, totally unsolicited. I mean, they're just great. I'm wearing them now.
Yeah.
My wife, Kira, works there. She's a higher-up, and while I don't quite understand what she does, I'm sure she can get you a box of that. Please respond with your size and color preference. I'll see what I can do. Also, I have a 55-gallon fish tank. We'll just get to that.
Hold on to that.
And another thing.
I used to drive by that factory, I think.
From Bill in Ellicott City in Maryland, and I have not read this yet. Nigel says it's lovely, and I should read it. It's long, and I will. Thank you, and Nigel, and Michael, and many more for the 30 years of stinking up my car with your voices, as you and the gang have been accompanying me on my commute for most of my adult life. In late May of 1992, when you hit the airwaves with a barely audible WTEM, I started listening then to a new type of sports radio that did not insult my intelligence or lack thereof. You and your cohorts have accompanied me and helped me through the many ups and downs of life, including my single days, marriage, three feminine children, the recent death of my dear beloved mother. I've laughed and cried along with the crew who, for some reason, I consider friends despite never having met any of you. Well, I did briefly help Coach Michael at a summer Sunday morning hockey clinic in the mid-90s and noticed his father sitting in the stands reading the paper. Your lives are intertwined with mine as I fondly recall Maggie and her love of trash cans and eating your London fog coat, Chessie and her appetite for Frisbees, your children and now grandchildren like Liz, my middle daughter, will be attending GW in the fall. Sorry, Michael. The birth of Spike and Ike. I still laughed at Gary's card he wanted to do at the time. Happy new rears. The amazingly talented Littles who are now a great part of the show and many more. I miss the regular cohorts, Liz, Jeannie, Edith, Tori, etc. Hope you can have the gang back on soon. We try to do that. We try to, you know, salt them in, pepper them in, you know, intersperse them. And I love all the guests from Anne Sy when she likes a movie to Bob Ryan's phone and the annual agent that a nine over an eight is not an upset. Phil's mom's enduring picks, tracking Pat Forty's daughter in the Olympics to Tim Kirchin's love of baseball and avocados and the health of Jason's dog, Copper. I came to D.C. in the late 80s to attend American. Shout out to D.A. and immediately liked your sports column. I was spoiled growing up in the Boston area, Dedham, not Revere, and read what I considered the best sports section, the 70s and 80s Globe. Sure, absolutely. The post-sports section rivaled it back then, and you were a big reason. My Sundays were not complete without your style section column. It was like nothing I'd read before, and its intelligence and humor instantly hooked me. I was thrilled when I heard you were going on the radio. I've been a loyal listener since day one. Words cannot express how much I've enjoyed the show, learned from it, and how much it means to me. In a time when we feel so disconnected, you've connected with so many and on multiple levels, and I can only say thank you and a hearty La Cheeserita to all. That's really quite nice. It's very lovely. Thank you, Bill. It's what we try for. I mean, we try not to insult your intelligence. You know, we try for a show that is smart and funny. I mean, again, I've said this 1,000 times. I'll forgive anything for smart and funny. Have a lovely... George Millet wrote a beautiful note and just sent the loveliest painting.
That's fantastic.
Just the loveliest painting of Crown Pride as a yearling. And he writes, I hope this note reaches you before you talk to Andy Beyer about the Derby, which we will do later in the show. Below is a rough rendering of Crown Pride as a yearling painted with watercolor and sea salt. Not really. Last time I checked, Crown Pride was somewhere around 50-1 to win at Churchill Saturday. There are no speed figures on him because he hasn't run in the USA. I love how his handlers are bringing him along. In the mornings before he gallops, they put him through dressage exercises, cantering and trotting in circles, also doing transitions. I've never seen this done with a racehorse. I love it. The horse's brain is being employed, not just his well-muscled body. He may get dusted like winners of the UAE Derby always do in the Kentucky Derby, but I'll be rooting for him. The great thing about his training is that Crown Pride will be able to get another job when his racing days are complete. Our wedding invitations haven't gone out yet, but the ceremony will be October 15th at Bethany Beach. We don't need a toaster. I got a toaster. We don't need a toaster, revolution or otherwise. We'd just be ecstatic if you came and had a drink with us. Oh, I started to count the outlets in our kitchen when I realized the island is positively thick with them. I lost count. There are a gazillion of them.
It's a humble brag.
It's just a lovely, lovely painting, isn't it?
It really is.
Congratulations. Yeah. We have the two of the greatest makeup artists in the world on PTI in what we call the old days before COVID. We have Renee and we have Jackie. And Jackie got married. Jackie got married to Oliver. Ollie, as everybody calls him. But Jackie didn't just get married. Jackie's just sent out a card with a picture of Ollie and Jackie, February 9th, 2021. She didn't tell anybody. Didn't tell me, anyway, for over a year.
It was just a few months ago.
For over a year. Dear friends and family, we're happy to announce that we got married in a private ceremony at Sunset Beach, North Carolina, on February 9th, 2021. While you were greatly missed, we are grateful for your love and support. Love, Jackie and Ollie.
That's right. Just said they're going to do it.
I got a toaster for them.
Are you sure this isn't like the email that you just find a year late?
No, I just got it.
Was it an email pile?
It just came to the house. And some people did know, Tracy, and never told me.
Did you ask?
Never told me. Well, how would I know to ask?
Any updates?
Yeah. You know. Anybody getting married?
Yes. So, yeah. All right. So the Wells Fargo tournament, starring Rory McIlroy and others, and Sergio Garcia in one of his last tournaments in the United States, apparently. Yeah. Went off yesterday. Micah, you went with the whole family. Tell us all about it and tell us about the Sergio.
So this was a reminder for me as to the power. I mean, I'm a golf fan. I've grown up being a golf fan. But when you have access to a local tournament to try and make an effort to get out there, the weather made it sort of look like yesterday was the best day. And for me, my boys are almost five and almost three. This was more about dad taking his boys to a golf tournament. Liz was happy to oblige. I joked that I was carrying Henry, but I was happy to carry Henry. And for me, I love using the phrase looking forwards and backwards. I'm seeing my boys tumble down the hill from the ninth green where they were eating goldfish up to the tee box. And I'm thinking about junior interclub matches that I played there. I'm looking back on the first tee, explaining to the boys and to Liz, when you played in the Wednesday
goes to the right
for what was the Kemper Open and how sort of nervous we were. And then again, when you got to play with John Daly a year or two later. So it's this weird blend because it's not the Kemper, but I feel like I'm reliving moments from the Kemper. I'm not sure if you remember this. I think one of the first tournaments you took me to was the Kemper. Sunday morning, we went out early. We wanted to see the early groups, and you being you, we post up by the practice green in between the first hole and the range. And I believe the player was Ronnie Black hitting bunker shots. And you just say to him, I can't ever get out of the sand. This is 20 plus years ago. And he goes, hey, here's a little lesson. He stops during his practice session and gives you a bunker lesson. We follow him for six holes. So that's sort of what you're thinking as you look back, and I was very happy to take the boys. We ended up running into Claude Jennings, golf DMV, a good friend of ours. And he texted me earlier, he said, I'm taking Manny out of school. We're going to go see Ricky. Ricky's his kid's favorite player. And to see how excited his boy was to follow, to run after Ricky's group, is everything about getting out there. So, we were only there for a few hours. The boys don't really have the stamina, but it's, I think people know even from just watching, they try and, spread the wealth. So you have the morning wave had Rory. We didn't get to see Rory. We saw some of the people coming off of that morning wave. But the afternoon, you have a super group with Jason Day, with Ricky Fowler, and with Max Homa, who is one of the biggest names in golf social media and has become a winner in his own right. So you're getting to see those players, which really is the future of the PGA Tour, as we're sort of thinking about the strength of the tour. And in the group ahead of them, you have what could be the sort of the past of the PGA Tour in Sergio, still a very recognizable name. Side note, Liz is looking at this. She goes, there's about 30 people walking the fairways with each group when it comes down to the scores, to the guys doing shot links, to the caddies, to the various officials. And we then went home and watched it on TV to watch sort of the end of it. And it's amazing how they can isolate on the player and you sort of get lost in just that sort of long shot. But you want to get to Serge or to Sergio, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't see this live. We are in the car driving out. I see it on replay. He is on the 10th hole. This 10th, 11th triangle is part of the floodplain that they've had to redo a number of times. So down left, there is a what looks like wetlands. There's long grass, there's creeks, but the entire length of that is the penalty area. He tries to take out three wood to keep it in play. He cranks it left, and the ball lands. You see it on TV. It lands about 12 yards away from a spotter just to the left of it, but it becomes an issue as he's walking down the fairway as to when would it become reasonable to, say, begin your search. Now, in golf, everyone tries to say, look without looking. If you can try within reason to get a few extra seconds, and that's the difference between, say, having to take that the penalty or not, that's sort of the wiggle room of golf. But it becomes to the question as to the official starts the clock on what Sergio seems early. And the camera work of this is beautiful. You have an isolated Sergio on the other side, sort of lost in this creek as he looks defeated.
Is he on the left side?
He's on the left side, yep. And he is just muttering under his breath, I can't wait to leave this tour.
Right.
It's literally, he's taking his golf club, slamming the trunk and going home. I can't wait to leave this tour. And then he just doubles down. He's like, it's only another couple weeks. I mean, it's like, yeah. He wants everyone to hear him.
He wants everyone to know he's going to the Saudi Golf Tour, where you get guarantees, where the tournaments are 54 holes, where there are no cuts, and he's going to make a pile of dough because he is an international star.
And it's also not anchored in the United States.
Right. He's an international star. He's not from here. And I know my immediate question is, now he's won the Masters. It's the only major he's ever won, but Sergio Garcia has been a star. He's been a star for a long time. He's been a star almost as long as Tiger Woods has been a star, and their careers are intertwined. Tiger Woods has all the majors. Sergio only has one. Sergio spit in the cup. There's a lot of things that Sergio has done which have angered.
According to Sergio, Tiger was protected.
Right.
Sergio was vilified.
That's
you have
right.
The regripping at Bethpage.
So there's a lot of stuff with Sergio, but to not consider Sergio Garcia a major star would be a mistake, because he is a major star. He may not be as liked as he could be or should be, but he's a major star. Well, he's leaving. He's going to the Saudi tour. Okay, when he says only two more weeks, my question would be, why don't you just get out now? Just get out now. You've got enough money. You've got international endorsements. You know, for many, many years, you're the only Adidas guy out there. I mean, get out now. You can't possibly need to mind. So that's the part I don't understand.
How about this? He's on the first page of the leaderboard. He had the most memorable shot yesterday. He holed out for eagle. So this is what's great. The PGA Tour, by looking at the talent it has, by mining for details after that outburst, they are replaying that everywhere. They're putting that on their Instagram feeds. But of course, that's helping their tournament. I would say simultaneously, it's helping the brand of Sergio and where Sergio wants to take that brand. And it's also creating a little bit more buzz for that golf league as they're trying to get more players. If you get the name like Sergio, maybe it becomes a little bit easier for one or two more players. Again, Greg Norman mentioned that maybe there's like 15 of the top.
He said there was 30% of the top 50, and if you do the math, it's 15.
Yeah. So maybe it makes it a little bit easier.
Sergio's a big name. I think they will get mostly international people because most of their stuff's going to be outside the country.
Yeah. So this was wild to watch it unfold. It does not, say, take away from some of the small moments. We were up by the first tee. I got to see a now local golfer, Greg Odom Jr., Howard, tee off, and to see the support that was swelling around that first tee was something special. And to see
another local guy, Denny McCarthy, shot 67
near the lead. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see.
Taught by Bob Dolan.
It'll be interesting to see how they get this tournament in because of the weather that's moving through the course today.
Yeah,
you sort of wish that you were that Thursday afternoon, Friday morning wave, just so you can get your two rounds in before it gets pretty done. But thank you for sending us out on that scouting mission. The report is Walker enjoyed a hot dog.
Yeah.
The porta potties are terrifying for the under five set, which is understandable. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't look like any potty you've ever seen at school or at home. So there you have it.
Big crowd.
I would say a very manageable crowd. Again, this is not a major. The Wells Fargo is a big tournament, but it's a work day. It's still a school day. So I assume you had a lot of people want to get out early because they're looking at that weather. But no, it's manageable. It was big to follow, you know, those back-to-back big groups. But you could post up anywhere and see some really interesting golf.
Matt Kelleher allegedly going on Sunday to that.
Oh, nice.
So that would be nice. I've spent a lot of time in my life at Avenel. It's too long for me. It's way too long for me, but I always sort of liked it. I liked it better than Greg Norman liked it. Greg Norman said it should be blown up.
Yes, he did.
The original ninth hole should be blown up. So
is that what we did? Where we did the show early in my tenure?
That's congressional pool.
Oh. When it was too hot.
So I also we're walking in. Too hot. I told Liz the story of the pool where you had to bring you out an air conditioner.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Had to be set up right by my feet. Air conditioning. It was just that was way too much. Yeah, way too much. I played golf yesterday. I went out early in the morning. I was in the first group. Al Serafino and myself and Barry Roth. Three fast players. Fast players. You know what I want to do, Michael, by the way? I want to get a new driver.
Great.
I want to get that sim driver. Barry Roth was killing it.
Okay.
He was killing it.
Delmar will help you. He'll give you a fitting.
Yeah, I want Steve Delmar to help me. So, because I got shop credit. I want to just...
You have to use it before the end of the year.
I'm going to use it.
I can only go through so much of yours.
Yeah. I got some left. I think like $12 or something like that. So we go out and we play and we are fast players to begin with. And we all were hitting it okay. I mean, we were not looking for balls for any length of time. And by the way, when you're fast, you don't look for balls for any length of time. You drop a ball and you move on. We finished 18 holes in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Wow.
If I could do that every day of my life, I would do that every day of my life. It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Had a few pars. Not many. Although I did well on the par threes.
How'd you do in the bunkers? Did you use that Ronnie Black lesson?
The first bunker I was in, I shankopotamused a wedge.
Did it get out at least?
On number five. I was in for three and then put it in my pocket. I just said, I'm done here. Give me an eight. Give me an eight.
Walking to the tee.
The next time I was in was number seven, and I was in for three. And I just said, give me a seven here.
When you see the ball going into the bunker, does your heart start racing because you just know I'm not getting out?
I did what, you told me lower your left shoulder. I hit the ball. I don't get under I don't know what I'm doing. I try. And then every once in a while I get out. I hit it so hard that it bangs off the side, kicks up in the air and rolls out. I'm a very, very bad sand player. Very bad. The rest of me is okay. I'm a very bad sand player. Could you help me?
I've offered for years. I'd say I've tried to level your shoulders. Next step for you is we're going to play with more of a square face, a little bit back of the stance. We're going to try and get you to steepen it just by that rather than some of the contortions that you're describing.
It's just awful. And can you fix my phone?
Like, sure, yeah. You still have people pinned for the messages, right?
You and Liz are like, you're in a circle and
ooh, I'm in the circle?
I don't really understand what's happened. This is so common for me. I don't understand. It's like, and it all happens all the time. You know, I call somebody up and I go, I have to make a payment. They go, well, you know, you can do this online. Oh. I said, I don't know how to do it online. Yeah, that's why I'm calling you. I'm old.
Right.
How old are you? Oh, you're not that old. Yeah, I am that old. So anyway. All right. Let's get to the show, right? We have Brian Windhorst. We have Andy Beyer. Andy Beyer is going to pick a Derby winner for us, which is great. And so we will be back with Brian Windhorst in a bit. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a singer named Jesse Rubin. Hallie Brooks sent us this, says, I do PR for an up-and-coming singer-songwriter from Brooklyn named Jesse Rubin. With more than 50 million streams, national television appearances, and placements on more than a dozen TV shows, he's rapidly gaining a strong, dedicated following. I don't understand any of that. He's also apparently involved in philanthropic endeavors. He's the founder of the We Can Project, service learning program that has reached more than 500,000 students. He's run 8 New York City marathons for charity, including 5 for Lyme disease research. Wow. He had Lyme disease. He was out for 3 years doing that.
Yeah, that'll take you down.
Lyme disease, awful.
Yeah.
You don't even know what's going on.
Exactly, yeah.
This is called This Is Why I Need You. We will talk about Jesse Rubin as well later in the show. This Is Why I Need You. It plays in Brian Windhorst. Full disclosure, it's 7:35 in the morning in the East. So where Brian is, it's 6:35 in the morning. I assume you're at home. Are you doing this? You're getting up for the Get Up show, I'm going to assume. That's what you're doing this morning?
That would have been a nice story. And I've done Get Up as early as 5 a.m. local in these playoffs because I was in Phoenix. But
right.
No, if you want the truth, I'm home for 2.5 days. And I got to get my hair cut at 7 a.m.
Oh,
so, like, this
okay.
This is how I got to roll when I'm on this in this playoff life.
No, I understand that because you're on call all the time. Am I crazy? There were no games last night. I was very surprised by that. We are now stuck to do a PTI show without a guest today because we've already had three guests this week and they've been great. But now on a Friday. And I loathe talking about the NBA exclusively, and now I wish I could, and there were no games last night. We've got to do five different stories with no games. How did that happen?
What about a protracted segment on the New York Mets?
Well, we're gonna definitely do the Mets and the comeback, you know, the seven runs in the ninth. But, I mean, how did the NBA, they were moving along at such a nice clip, two a night. Why did this happen?
I don't know. I've never seen this before. It's also odd that the two series on Wednesday play Friday and the two series on Tuesday go till Saturday. And it looks like the networks are flipping it because they want different games on Saturday and Sunday than they had last week. I don't understand why. Historically, in this spot, especially when there's so many games in the Central Division, as there are this time, they would have split the series and figured out a way to do it. But yeah. I don't know. It also may come down to how many dates Turner has and how many dates ESPN is owed. It's all high-level stuff, but long story short, no games on a Thursday night. You didn't like it, Tony, but I sure as heck did.
No, and I understand that. So now we got hockey, and I don't know anything about hockey. The PTI show,
either.
I'm just going to warn people. It's going to be just one of the people on the PTI show is going to be a moron today. I don't know. We got to do something creative.
Can I just say,
yeah,
real quick, during this playoff run, I spent some time in Phoenix, and I visited the Wilbon Estate in Scottsdale.
Castle Wilbon, North Scottsdale. Don't confuse it with Scottsdale.
Oh,
the temperature is much different. North Scottsdale.
It's north, buddy. It's so far north, you can't believe you're still in Arizona. But let's just have a moment and have a cheers to Mr. Wilbon. The man lives well. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, there's no question about that. And nobody loves being who he is more than Michael Wilbon loves being Michael Wilbon. He does. You know, it's wonderful for him. And he refuses, by the way, it's such a snob thing. He never says, like, when he refers to where he is, he never says Phoenix. Never. He'll say Arizona. He'll say North Scottsdale. He'll say out here in the desert. He never says Phoenix. Phoenix must be low rent, right? Brian, Phoenix must be low rent.
Well, that's all fine, and you can say that, and you could be true about that, but I have to say, it's a long way from downtown Phoenix up there.
It is.
I was very happy to go, and we watched playoff games, and he hosted us, and it was wonderful. We watched the sunset off the back, desert sunset there, but it's a long way from downtown Phoenix, just for your planning your travel time to and from Suns games. Let me tell you. Not a short trip.
No, I agree with that. Having been to where he lives a couple of times in my life, you need a passport. It is a hike. It's 45, 50 minutes. It's
you
a
don't
long
just
hike.
Need a passport. You need arrival permission. Otherwise, you're not getting into the anywhere near the premises.
He talks about me living. I don't live in a gated community. I have a fence. I don't live in a gated community. Wilbon, yeah, you better present credentials. Yeah, seriously.
Absolutely.
They got
Absolutely.
Armed guards there. You know, nobody's kidding around. All right, let me get to some of these games. Philadelphia, I sat on the PTI set the day the trade was made, and I said, that's it. Philadelphia's going to be in the NBA Finals. James Harden is going to be the best guard in the league as he was last year, as he was earlier this year. I'm wrong. If Embiid is out for game three as well, this is over, right? This is over.
It might be over anyway. I do think, as we sit here on Friday morning, I do think Embiid is going to try to play, although I have learned, do not assume stuff with concussion recovery. And that's really, yeah, I think, what's holding him back right now is concussion recovery. Miami is very good, although they haven't been great in this series because they haven't had their lead guard. But Kyle Lowry should be back tonight. You know, Tony, this is such a basic stat in this world of advanced stats. Harden can't get shots up.
No.
You know, and just for frame of reference, in 2019-20, the last year before the pandemic year, so a while ago, but not a decade ago, Harden averaged 23 shots a game. Averaged. It was not unusual to see Harden put up 23 pointers in a game. And let me just say that when you get fouled on a shot, it doesn't count as a shot in the stat book. So when you would see Harden have a 24 shot night, it meant that he probably put up about 30 plus shots. When he was in Brooklyn earlier this season, he averaged 17 shots. So it was down playing with Durant and Kyrie, but still he got up, you know, a lot of shots. He is averaging 13 shots with the Sixers, and in this series without Durant, 13 shots.
Without Embiid.
He just can't, Embiid. I'm sorry, without Embiid.
Embiid, yeah.
He just can't get shots up. And that is an indication he can't get separation, he can't get open, and he just doesn't have the explosion and the burst and the separation that he had. And as a result, Tony, if you had gone to that game in Miami and you knew basketball but you didn't know the NBA, you would have watched the game and said, boy, this guy Maxey is their best guard. He is young and great. They should build around him. What do you think about number one there with the beard? Oh, good veteran, table setter, probably a valuable guy to have on your roster as a veteran table setting leader. And then if you said, well, actually, that guy is making $44 million and he's hoping to get $250, the guy would say, well, you're out of your freaking mind. We can't continue this conversation. But that's right. The reality. He is now that type of player.
Overnight. Simply overnight. Amazing. All right, we'll shift to another series where Wilbon, you know, had great fears for the Phoenix Suns. It's going to go at least six, probably go seven. I said it's a five-game series. Kendrick Perkins on TV said it was a four-game series, and he would have picked three if he could have. That series is over. Dallas has one player. That's all they got, right? One player. That series is over.
Well, there's moments where they have, you know, Jalen Brunson comes alive. But, Tony, this Phoenix team, I spent a lot of time around them this year. They remind me of the 2014 Spurs, the year after they blew that series to the Heat. And I remember being with the Spurs in training camp that year, and I thought that they wouldn't want to talk about the previous season, but they actually wanted to talk about it a lot. And it bothered them and drove them. And I'm not saying that the Suns are, like, bothered that intensely by last year's finals, but they came this year with such a focus. And I was there when the Sarver stuff came down, and it obviously upset them, but they basically had a team understanding that we are not going to let this derail us, as this season is too important. And from the moment that Chris Paul wakes up on game day, from what I can tell, he's thinking about the fourth quarter. And when the fourth quarter starts, he's always sitting on the last seat on the bench, and he's wrapped up in towels, and he's drinking some sort of drink, who knows what's in it, and he's like a boxer coming out of the corner for the 12th round. He unwraps himself, and he throws his shoulders back, and he drinks that thing, and he strides down to the huddle, and he just sets the whole thing up to be dominant in the fourth quarter. He conserves his energy throughout the game, and they're doing the exact inverse on Luka. They run Luka around in circles in the first and second quarters because they're thinking about the fourth quarter, and their calibration and their strategy and their focus is on a different level. And in 2 years, maybe Chris Paul just can't do it anymore, and Luka will be in better condition and learn how to play defense, and it'll be laughable if they play in 2 years. But today, right now, you have a team with a master's degree against a college sophomore, and it shows.
Yeah. I'm not even going to deal with the Boston-Milwaukee series now, because that is the one that I don't really know how it's going to go. And I want to get to Golden State, a team that I think will win handily both games at home, but I could be wrong about that. But let's get to the Steve Kerr issue. Steve Kerr went out there, and he said of Dillon Brooks, he broke the code. Now, this is a very risky position for a coach to take, even Steve Kerr, even a guy who's an Olympic coach. It's a very risky position to take, because you're accusing another player of deliberately trying to maim somebody, even though it's your player got hurt. Risky. And a lot of guys, Jalen Rose, for example, went, oh, he didn't try to break the code. But Kendrick Perkins said he did try to break the code. What did you think of it? And what do you think about what I think is a laughably small suspension of just one game when the other guy's out? He's not coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, so not only that, it's an important player. Not that it really should matter how important the player is. I mean, I don't know about the whole breaking the code. I mean, I've seen video of Bill Laimbeer shoving Larry Bird in the back while he's – I mean, that is, to me, you know, he hit him very hard in the head in the middle of a high-intensity playoff series. I don't think that he intended to injure him like that. He did intend to knock him over, and if intending to knock him over is breaking the code, then I guess that's what it is. I guess every person has a different interpretation. I would say this, in 2022, that's about as egregious of a foul as you're going to see. So by today's standard, it is suspension worthy. The league has a history of taking into effect the severity of the injury in a suspension, and considering the playoff series and the stakes, if it had been two games, I don't think it would have been an egregious situation where people would have been horrified. And the league took a day and a half or almost 2 days on it. I mean, it was pretty clear once we heard that that Gary Payton's elbow was broken, that it was going to be a suspension. The real surprising thing is that they took 2.5 days and then only suspended them one game. So, I agree with you about Golden State. They shot 7 of 38 from three-point range in Game 2. 7 of 38. Klay Thompson was 2 of 12. I realize he's not in his prime at this point, but 2 of 12. And they lost that game by 5 on the road, having the worst shooting game of like the Splash Brothers era. So I do think that bodes well that the Warriors are going to shoot better. I also don't think that the Grizzlies play the level of smart, I don't want to call, they just don't play smart basketball very often for a team that's got to win three more. But I do think that losing Payton hurts them.
Yes.
Because
primary defender.
And also their quote unquote death lineup where they play the three guards together, which everybody loves to see because they just run and gun. Memphis is trouncing it. They can't play that lineup. So Steve Kerr has got to have done some coaching here in these couple of days off, because he's going to have some different strategies to, you know, coming out.
So just my overall view, and I sit with Wilbon 5 days a week, and you know how much he loves the NBA, and he goes on and on about it. It's the deepest NBA of all time. 1 through 8, maybe 1 through 10. No surprises. No, if 10 wins, no surprise. They beat one. It's not a surprise because everybody's that good. So what happens is 1, 2, 3, and 4 all win, and now it looks like 1, 1, 2, 2 or 1, 1, 2, 3. So what about that?
Well, I would say two things. The New Orleans Pelicans, as the 9 seed that won their way in, gave the Suns a lot of problems. And, you know, that was an interesting series that was not really a 1-8 series, but in the end it was a 6-game series. The Bucks Celtics series, which is the series I'm covering. I was in Boston the first two. I'm going to Milwaukee tomorrow.
That's the most interesting one. It is.
Those two teams both are championship-level teams that could be a champion, regardless of Phoenix and regardless of Golden State. So all four of those teams in different years would have been the standalone breakaway champion. But it still could go chalk.
Yeah.
You know, Boston could still win. And so I think that is, you know, that is something that is worth pointing out, that these series are competitive. And I think both of those series, Golden State, Memphis, and Definitely. I think Boston-Milwaukee's got a real chance to go seven and be an absolute slugfest.
I agree.
And be like, wow, how is this a conference semifinal? I do think that there is some truth to that. I've never seen a defense that's quite like the Celtics defense. They are rough and tough and disciplined, and they held Durant to 38% shooting and five turnovers a game the last round and flustered him. Two games into this series, granted, Giannis had a great playmaking game in game one. He had 12 assists and it was impressive, but he still was 9 of 25. He's shooting 38% and averaging five turnovers, and it is really remarkable to watch the Celtics play defense. They could get the title this year for sure.
That would be nice because they don't have superstars and they're not. And anybody who's not Brooklyn, it would be nice if they won to me. All right, enjoy your haircut. Thank you so much for being on early in the morning. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Tony. I hope you leave me the gate code for when I come to see you.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. We will come back. Andy Beyer will join us when we return. Talk about the Kentucky Derby. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Jesse Rubin. This is called The First Day of Summer. And I should tell people that Jesse Rubin is headlining Rams Head on stage in Annapolis on May 12th. So if you got no plans for May 12th, which is next week.
Yeah, I think that's next Wednesday, correct?
Yeah, Rams Head on stage in Annapolis. And apparently Jesse, according to Hallie, is a huge fan of PTI. That's nice. Yeah. Nice to know. So I'm glad we're playing his music. And Michael, if people like Jesse Rubin want to allow us to play their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
This is what everybody waits for around Kentucky Derby time, Andy Beyer's appearance. I'm so happy to have Andy. And eventually we will ask Andy who he thinks will win the race. But let's start with probably the best overall sports story in the Derby, and that is the banning of Bob Baffert. He's not allowed in the track. He's persona non grata at Churchill Downs, the most famous track in the United States of America for the most famous race that he's won a number of times. Andy, do you agree with the banning of Bob Baffert?
Somewhat. This is a very nuanced story, Tony, because Baffert has been portrayed as kind of like the arch fiend of racing, yeah. Like a despicable cheater. I mean, the fact is that, you know, we have seen even in recent years other high profile trainers who were just like cheating so flagrantly with drugs that there was no mystery about it, and two of them were investigated and sent and convicted and sentenced to prison and were essentially running a part of a criminal enterprise to manufacture and mislabel and distribute high powered performance enhancing drugs. Baffert has never done anything like that. His infractions, and he's gotten a lot of them, are the type that trainers kind of get a fair amount of the time. They use a legal medication. They use it too close to the race. The horse tests positive, and they get a suspension. But this is not a class one felony. The trouble with Baffert is that he's done this so much. He's always, tried. you know, seems to cut corners and break the rules just a little bit. And plus, he has so many connections within the industry that he's got enablers who have, helped him kind of sweep his own infractions under the rug. And so when one of his, you know, when the Derby winner last year tested positive for, you know, what was, a substance that, would not be classified as rocket fuel. I mean, Churchill decided to, properly to throw the book at him. I mean, they've got a, the Derby's the most important race in America. All eyes were on this, and they had to protect their prime product and convince the public that that they were really doing something in the interests of of the integrity of the game. So they threw the book at him, and whether it was merited or not, we can debate all day. But Baffert has Baffert just can't say, okay, I did it. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. We're moving on with it. He's always trying to wriggle out of it. Call lawyers, and so he hasn't ennobled himself during all of this.
No, so this speaks to the point that Pat Forty made the other day on this show. And Pat was a columnist at the Louisville Courier-Journal for a million years. I mean, this is Pat's race. He understands it. He said they threw the book at Baffert because Baffert, insulted them and disgraced them, and they'd been waiting a long time for this because and Pat said he's always fooling around with lawyers. My question to him is the same question that I have to you. Bob Baffert's one of the greatest trainers of all time. I am surprised this punishment held up. I'm surprised that it went this long. Are you?
Well, Churchill had, it was on pretty solid grounds, I guess, by, with the right of the right to exclude unwanted people from private property. That underlay the ban when Baffert got caught fair and square with a medication violation, the Racing Commission imposed a penalty. So they had him, and the lesson is this: don't mess with the Kentucky Derby.
That's the most important thing
in the sport.
Pat said it's like the Masters is. It's the biggest thing, and you don't do it. Let me get to this. Baffert has, there's nothing in the rules that says Baffert can't. He's got two horses. These are his horses. Messier and Tabor are his horses. There's nothing in the rules that says he cannot have conversations with or advise the person who's training these horses, whose name is Tim Yakteen. We talked about this the other day on the show and on PTI. Tim Yakteen, who at one point worked for Bob Baffert. Yakteen says they've had no conversation at all, and as I said on the air yesterday, you can believe that if you want to. Do you think that Baffert is involved?
I am told by my friend Jay Priffman, who is an ace reporter for the Racing Form, that the answer is no. I suspected Baffert, lurking in the wings, but. Mm-hmm. But he said that the racing officials in Kentucky made it clear to the owners and to everyone if there were any contact between Baffert and the person training for him, then the horse would be out. The substitute trainer would be out. I think they're watching him with a great deal of concern for what he might be doing. So I think this is, if Jay is correct and he's an ace reporter, that Baffert is playing it straight this time.
Well, the only thing that I would say about that is that the exercise rider and the groom, they're Baffert's guys. Yeah. He could be talking to them. It could be surreptitious. I mean, I don't know. These horses are worth many millions of dollars. You win the Kentucky Derby, it's a big deal. Do you believe that there's no influence whatsoever?
Look, I'm a suspicious guy. From the outset, I suspected, that he had to be, standing in the corner of the barn, kind of whispering instructions. And again, Jay, my friend Jay is on, is really on top of this out there, and he said, they're playing it straight this time, so I'll believe that.
It's a very cool story. It gives the Derby a lot of added interest, and it makes people respond to it in ways that they don't usually.
And the thing is, the thing that's tough for a fan, Baffert is not a bad guy.
He's a nice guy.
He's charming. He's smart. I love, always loved to talk to him, to interview him. I mean, I'd rate him the best trainer I've ever seen. So, he's entitled to excel.
I get this. I mean, I've met him a number of times, like him a lot. My friend David Israel's, David's wife, Lindy, went to school with him in Arizona. They're really close pals. Let's get to this year's Derby. Is it a good field? Do you have any idea? It's so early, three-year-olds, who knows? But is it a good field? And I needed to ask you about a horse called Crown Pride that trains in a sort of an odd way that, does dressage work as well as sprints. And he's about 100-1. But go ahead.
I think it will prove to be a good field when we have some hindsight on these horses. One of the things that's difficult nowadays in judging horses in the Derby is that they run so sparingly. Back in the old days, like Carey back in 1961, you came into the Derby, he'd run like 20 or 25 times. Now the fashion is to just bring horses into the race, with light training or at least, kind of very restrained schedules. The average horse in this field has made 5 career starts, and you just can't judge them. I mean, I look at horses' records in this field and say, well, I think this horse is good, but I haven't seen him do X. I haven't seen him do Y. I can't make a definitive judgment about most of them, but I think come November we'll look back and say, hey, this was a pretty good bunch.
No, I'd put you on the spot, even though you can't make a definitive judgment. I know you like to watch horse races with a couple of bucks down. Who do you like? Who do you like to win?
First of all, Tony, you should have introduced me by saying that after a drought of several decades,
I did
pick the winner last year.
Yes, you did.
Medina Spirit, who paid $21. Now, the chance... based on my history, the chances of my picking, a $20 winner 2 years in a row is probably infinitesimal.
Yeah.
But I like a 10-1 shot in this race by the name of White Abario, Abarrio. He's just gotten lost in the shuffle in the pre-Derby discussions, but I thought when he ran in Florida this winter, and his race in the Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream was as good as any prep race that any of these horses have run. I mean, the horses who finished second and third behind him that day, both came back to win major prep races. His buyer speed figure was a little low that day, but it was kind of a tricky day, I think, from the speed figure standpoint. He's on a par with everybody else, with all the other top contenders. I think part of the reason he's been ignored is you've got so many so many big shot stables in this race. I mean, Todd Pletcher, I mean, the Steve Asmussen, Chad Brown, these are the leaders of the sport. And, of course, you've got the, you know, the Baffert or ex-Baffert horses. And White Abardio was trained by a guy named Safi Joseph Jr., who was a Bahamian, who's done very well at Gulfstream, and he does beat the big guns down there, but he doesn't have a big national reputation, so I think that's kind of contributed to his obscurity. But I just feel that White Abardio is, you know, is as good as anybody, and at 10-1, I will go for two in a row.
We hope you win, Andy. We'll talk to you before the Preakness. Thank you.
Okay, bye, Tony.
Andy Beyer, he's the king of this. Like, nobody knows more. Some may know as much. Nobody knows more about horse racing than Andy Beyer. Nobody in the world.
No,
nobody.
And when he referenced the Beyer speed figure?
Yeah, it's his. It's the Beyer speed figure. It's not the Nigel speed figure. It's not the Wilbon speed. It's the Beyer speed figure. We'll take a break. Come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love that. I wish I could do that. I would like to just sit alone in a room of about six or seven people at the end of the evening and do that.
That's right.
Bruce Griffin. It's just great.
Isn't that great? I was thinking Mitch the whole time when that was going on. I just wish I had that
wonderful
skill.
Do you have the Bethesda Bagels ad?
I do. Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. All you need to do is go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled. And can I just take a second?
Please do.
To congratulate the Marist War Eagles, and specifically Mary Margaret Flig, a young freshman, just turned 16 on Monday, scored the winning goal to give his soccer team the Georgia State Championships.
It's wonderful.
And it was from way deep. It was like 30, 40 yards
Mary
out.
Margaret.
Mary Margaret.
Love it.
Yes.
Love it. That's it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me say, I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. There are two main characters in Chariots of Fire. There's the guy who runs the 100, Harold Abrahams, and the guy who runs the 400. He's going to run another race, too, but he can't because it's on the Sabbath and he cannot run. And the one he runs and runs great. And I have forgotten his name.
Eric Little.
Eric Little. Just such a great movie. Thanks to our guests today, Andy Beyer, Brian Windhorst. Thanks to today's sponsors, Progressive, ZipRecruiter, Solo Stove. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review.
Ketchup. Someone was asking about my brisket. Ketchup.
Is that a little squirt?
Little squirt into the braising liquid before you cover it, put it in the oven. Ketchup.
From George Angel in Baltimore. Catching up on the week's podcast, I was delighted to hear that Sam Angel of Silver Spring, formerly of Drexel, frequents the Soviet Safeway to buy cottage cheese for his 3-year-old daughter. Sam, the person to whom I'm related by paternity, sometimes drops the little girl off at our place in Baltimore for a visit and some free babysitting. It was on such an occasion several months ago that her grandmother offered her a cottage cheese snack. Never having tasted the stuff, she was a little skeptical, but gamely took a taste, smiled broadly, and wolfed down a full bowl. She even asked for a refill. After she'd polished it off, a look of puzzlement came across her face. Grandma, she said, where's the cottage? Apparently it was self-evident to her that something called cottage cheese must have a toy cottage hidden in it. Have to admit, the incident has changed the experience of cottage cheese for me. I still enjoy it, but always with a tinge of regret that no cottage, or as you would say, little house, is left in the dish after the large curd goodness is all gone.
I'll reach out to Sam about that free
Fathers
babysitting.
Fathers and sons. Yes. Fantastic. From Jeff Martin in Voorheesville, New York. Who eats cottage cheese with a fork? Get a spoon. I eat it with a fork.
That's
Stand
the way you do
the
it.
Sink, and I eat it with a fork. From Ben Champa in Capitol Hill. In college, I used to eat cottage cheese by dipping Cool Ranch Doritos into it and then using it like a dip. Then once the chips were gone, I would eat the now Cool Ranch flavored cottage cheese. It was fantastic. The folks at Lucerne can have that one for free. From Brandon Costello, our friend in Lexington, Kentucky.
Brad.
I recently started going to the chiropractor. It turns out my pelvis has shifted and my left leg is an inch short. Got a big knot middle back that aches and wraps around my right side, but no real structural damage. Thank you. Yes. Thank you for that update, and we wish you good health.
Yes, we do.
From Scott in Falls Church, Virginia. This gout is killing me. Well, we need to wish you good health
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
From Paul Simon, not that Paul Simon, as the unofficial Atlanta-based divorced attorney for the pod, I feel compelled to answer the question, are pretzels grounds for divorce? While not at all making any representation as to the likely outcome of this particular circumstance. Yes. Yes, they are. Also grounds for treason. From Andrew Milmo in Denver, Colorado, Drew Goodman, the Rockies play-by-play announcer, proclaimed himself a little on air during the Phillies game Tuesday night. He was told it's National Pretzel Day, and he said he learned as much listening to the Tony Kornheiser show. I suppose he is a medium. This is fantastic.
Isn't that great?
Drew Goodman.
We're going around the league.
You know, we are spreading.
Yes.
We are a fungus, I'm afraid. Joe Rizzo in Oak Hill, Virginia. Kirkchin never ceases to amaze. During last Wednesday's pod, he started off by saying he's terrible at baseball trivia, then proceeds to match every answer with his own bit of trivia, which was more obscure than the original question. Other than Tim, who else on this planet knows that three games Guidry lost in 1978 were against pitchers named Mike?
Yeah, phenomenal.
There's another story about Ron Guidry from Travis in South Weber or South Weber, Utah. I think it's probably Weber because of Weber State.
Yeah.
I grew up most of my life in South Louisiana. Around the mid to late 90s, my dad was competing in rec softball tournaments. At one of those many tournaments, me and my dad were standing around near a concession stand, and my dad hands me a ball, points at a man, and says, "You should go and ask that man for an autograph." I looked at the man and then back at my dad, puzzled. My dad is a lanky 5'10", maybe 145 soaking wet, and this man whose autograph I'm about to request was that or maybe even less impressive as my dad. Awkwardly, I walked over to the man whose name I did not know with a ball and ink pen in hand. I asked the man for an autograph, and he turned around, looked me up and down, and said, "Sure, kid." He signed the ball. I said a quick thanks and ran off. When I got back to my dad, I looked down at the ball, and I asked him, "Who the heck is Ron Guidry?" So if you don't know what Ron Guidry was doing later on after retirement, he's still playing ball with hometown friends. That is a great story. From Malcolm Smith in Carmel, Indiana. The kids are traveling in Western Europe just now. Made sure to report to me that both the hotels they've checked into so far are two-bathrobe hotels. They knew I would ask. From Gus Ribeiro in Albany, New York. On a recent family trip to Disney World, the woman to whom I'm related by merger, booked us for a grossly overpriced dinner in a fake castle. Looking over the wine list, she suggested we ordered a Pinot from Willamette Valley. Using a firm and clear voice, I said, "It's pronounced Willamette. It rhymes with damn it. It's from Oregon." She gave me the most confused and incredulous look and muttered, "How did you know about Oregon wines? Professor Tony, thank you very much for making this Disney magic happen for me. And please advise my ex-boss, the notorious Gus in South Glens Falls, to kindly eat it." By the way, we recommend wines. We recommend Willamette Valley. We recommend Bell's Up.
Yeah.
We recommend Wenslow Vineyards in California.
Have you gotten to the note from Dave yet?
I have not seen the notes yet. I didn't even know that was dropped
off. I dropped
off.
It off when you were playing golf.
From Claire Natola. Dear Mr. Tony, on Monday's show, you joked that Joe Arrow would be a great one to pretend he's never done karaoke and then proceed to knock it out of the park. Coincidentally, I just arranged for a bunch of littles to meet up on Saturday, May 14th in Pasadena, Maryland, to attend a karaoke night that Joe Arrow is hosting. All littles are welcome to join us starting at 9 p.m. at the Time Out Bar and Grill at 7774 Outing Avenue. Joe kills it, but I stink, so talent is not required. In fact, singing itself is not required. Just come hang out with us. Reach out to Joe or call me Cool Aunt Claire via social media with any questions. P.S. I had a great first date a couple of weeks ago with a guy I met through the Bumble dating app. However, when we left the restaurant, I saw he was driving a Subaru. I'm still looking. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. And one more from Carla Corrado, who we love dearly in Columbus, Ohio. Mr. Tony, I miss our email jihads. So do I. So do I. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time. God.
I have so many questions and places to go. There are too many options, far too many unknowns. This is why I need you. And everyone talks now, but no one is right. There are too many armies with no one to fight. This is why I need you. 'Cause you make the darkness less dark. You make the edges less sharp. You make the winter feel warmer. And you make my weakness less weak. You make the bottom less deep. You make the waiting feel shorter. You make my crazy feel normal every time. You are the who, love is the what, and this is the why. There are so many problems and no one who cares. There are so many roads and they all need repairs. This is why I need you. And there's not enough chocolate, there's too many chores. There are so many mountains that I haven't explored. This is why I need you. 'Cause you make the darkness less dark. You make the edges less sharp. You make the winter feel warmer. And you make my weakness less weak. You make the bottom less deep. You make the waiting feel shorter. You make my crazy feel normal every time. You are the who, love is the what, and this is the why. You keep the ship moving forward. And you make it easy to try. You make my crazy feel normal every time. You are the who, love is the what, and this is the why. You are the who, love is the what, and this is the why. You are the who, love is the what, and this is the why.
You can call the cops, call the police. You stole my heart, this one's a thief. Call off the search, look at the facts. I love you so much that I don't want it back. Oh, we got a good thing going on, and I don't want another. I know it might sound sappy, but you make me so happy, like the first day of summer. Call you darling, you call me honey. No, it don't matter if we run out of money. You make me laugh while I'm making dinner. You're so fun and it's so simple. Oh, we got a good thing going on. We rely on each other.
sound sappy, but you make me so happy, like the first day of summer. I know it might sound sappy, but you make me so happy, like the first day of summer.
But you make me so happy.